All right, Calvin Kaya.
It's been a little time, I can't remember exactly. But we were married in Ellicott City.
Oh.
We eloped.
Oh, you eloped? Did
yes.
your mother encourage you? I mean, your mother didn't approve of your marriage to Mr. Kaya?
No.
Is it fair to ask why?
Didn't have anything.
Oh, he didn't have anything.
He had a wonderful heritage. His father headed to Princeton Academy.
Mm-hmm.
She felt that her children should wait, her girls especially, I guess all mothers feel the same way, that their girls should be married to men who could really support them.
Really support them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he seems to have proven to be quite a worthy catch. I mean,
I felt that way.
Uh-huh.
When I saw, he's a son of Dr. Thomas Kaya, Princess Anne, who headed Princess Anne Academy, which became Maryland State College for 26 years. There were 11 children. And he, of all of the children, was the only one who tried to help himself in school. He was a janitor at Morgan College. That's when I first met him. He was cleaning the grounds and taking care of the fires at one of the, at Washington Hall. Of course, Washington Hall, I think, has been torn down. I was impressed while I was out there attending the Epworth League Institute during the summer of, I can't even remember around 1930 or 31. I saw him doing this work, found out whom he was, and I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
A fella whom I felt didn't have to do that type of thing, the son of a president or head of an institution of that type, which was one of the major institutions at the time in Maryland, and on the Eastern Seaboard, I felt that he had some qualities, or possessed some qualities that were such that I might do something about it.
So you said you were going to do something about it, and I guess uh-huh. doing something about it was eloping to Ellicott City?
That's right.
And I can't understand your mother being so opposed to Mr. Kaya, as she seems to have been a lady who approved of people who showed some initiative and get up and go about themselves. How about your father?
She didn't. They both didn't know but so much about him at the time.
Oh, I see.
And they felt that I should wait and finish school, as most parents feel, and go as far as possible in education, art education especially. My mother wanted me to, in fact, my parents wanted me to become a supervisor of art. The supervisor was about to retire. And,
for colored schools?
Yes, in colored schools.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall her name right now, but she thought that I could take her place because I was really prepared.
Mm-hmm. Was this after you had graduated from
I taught a year.
Before you got married?
Before I got married.
Right.
That's right, I taught a year.
Did your mother have an indication that you would be appointed to this position as a supervisor?
Well, the supervisor herself was grooming me for the job.
Oh, yes. I see. So your
mother. Yes, she had me to observe her and so forth, you know. She thought that I would follow her.
Now, I was just wondering.
There were very, you see, there weren't any qualified black art teachers at the time except Leroy Chippy Taylor, what was his first name, who taught art at the high school, Douglas High School. There were no other qualified people. He graduated from the same school, art school, I went to. And that's the main reason I went to the
art school. And what's the name of that art school?
Philadelphia Museum and School of Art on Broad and Pine Streets in Philadelphia. It's a very old school. It's now the Philadelphia College of Art. It was a very old school dating back about 1878 or somewhere in there. So that since my mother and father wanted me to have the best,
mm-hmm.
they eventually sent me to that school.
Right.
But
When I came out, there were no other qualified persons but myself.
Did Mr. Kaya encourage you in your art endeavors?
See, I taught her here before I got married.
Right.
See, now let me see.
You got married, in, say, you think, around 1932?
Well, my husband was, when my husband got out of school, when he graduated from Morgan, it was difficult for him to get a teaching job because it was during the Depression years. He just found it hard to get a job, period, in teaching. So as a result, he got a job selling insurance policies, Southern Life Insurance Company.
And that was headed by Willard Allen.
Willard Allen was headed by Willard Allen. He walked the streets, especially East Baltimore, trying to sell insurance policies, 10-cent insurance policies, 25-cent insurance policies. He didn't have a debit from someone else, established by someone, started by someone else, to build up on. He had to start from scratch, and there's where the problems came in. Some weeks we lived on $1.25 per week.
Mm-hmm. So you were married when he was selling insurance?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes.
Well, so you stayed in Baltimore for how many years before? Didn't you finally move to Cambridge? Go back to Cambridge?
We went to Cambridge eventually, and we, but not then. He finally was offered a job. A job offering came up, teaching job, in the counties of Maryland, because most of those who had majored in teaching at Morgan College wanted to stay in the city, but he's willing to go out in the rural areas of Maryland. So, eventually, this teaching job opened up at Upper Marlboro, Maryland, which is about 19 miles from Washington. We were there for 2 years. He taught there for 2 years. Then he was promoted to a principalship in Prince Frederick, Maryland. And we stayed there for about two years. Then he was promoted to Cambridge, Maryland, which was supposed to be a top job at that time.
When was that? Can you recall?
Was it okay.
Was that the early 40s? Was that the early 40s that he was promoted at Cambridge? If you got married around 32, and I think I've sort of totaled this up in my head, it comes out to about early 40s and when he moved
perhaps
to Cambridge.
Perhaps so. We were there for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Two of those years he was, we had established residence there for 13 years, but nearly three of those years he was in the Army.
Right. And but he did encourage you in your artwork.
Oh, yes, Robert. When we were at Cambridge, I would go up to New York and stay for 10 days and get orders, portrait orders. I would contact the heads, the chairman of the trustee and deacon boards of the Methodist and Baptist churches. I'd appear before those boards when I found out when the boards were scheduled to meet. I'd take a sample of my work or samples of my work, and then I would preach art, portraits.
Mm-hmm.
When I received my commissions and my deposits, I would go on back to Maryland, and where I would get started on the portraits, and then bring them for the unveilings, bring them back. The unveilings. Adam Powell's portrait was painted as a result of using that type of technique.
Did your mother ever help you to get commissions?
Yes.
And which
one? That is later on. When I opened up my mother was after me to open a studio in Baltimore because we were in Savannah then. She said that I could use one of her little stores. There's one store that had been a beauty shop wedged between the buildings 1625 and 1620 Druid Hill Avenue. One of her stores. Well, you know, she was in real estate. She had been in real estate for some time, doing it the hard way. She'd even get up on the roofs of garages
mm-hmm.
in the rears of several of the houses she owned in the 1600 block,
mm-hmm.
and she would patch roofs, patch herself. She put on my father's pants, and she did things in that fashion. Went around a little Ford, secondhand Ford. That for years she used that Ford as a means of economizing. Now,
Mrs. Kai, on October 14th, 1939, the Afro had a photograph of you unveiling the portrait of Ida Cummings, a local supporter of NAACP, and she was head of the Francis Harper Elks Temple, I think. Did your mother have anything to do with you getting that commission, or how did
no,
you go about getting
it? No, at that time I did all my own contacting. She helped me when I had the studio up on Droid Hill Avenue. Did we finish that?
Yes.
Studio on Droid Hill Avenue. At least she, I didn't pay any rent whatsoever. I just fixed it up for the studio, and I, for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
would commute from Savannah to Baltimore. In this fashion, I'd remain for about 10 days in Baltimore, get my commissions
mm.
in the studio, and then I'd go on back to Savannah and paint.
Mm.
And I'd come up for the unveilings or send the paintings.
Well, that was after your husband moved to
Savannah. Yes, Savannah.
That was when? When did he move back? When did you move to Savannah?
You know, Mr. Graham, when you ask me about these dates, I have a time because I've been married for a period of time, and
right.
It takes a little time to reflect
mm.
on these dates. I can't remember offhand. I
mm.
really can't. All I can say is that we were in Savannah in Cambridge for 13 years, and we've been in Savannah for 20, going on 26 years now.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that article
wait a minute. You asked me about my mother. If she helped me to get any orders. Now, when we have the studio,
mm-hmm.
when I have the studio on Droid Hill Avenue, 1620, I think it was 1625 and a half Droid Hill Avenue, my mother would check with the ministers when they would happen to come in, the NAACP office,
mm-hmm.
or my sister's. You know, this office here on Droid Hill Avenue,
right.
My sister's office.
Law office, right.
A law office. Mama would say, you need to have a portrait painted of yourself. You know good and well that they're not going to think about you. In fact, after you're gone, there ain't going to be anything up there at all unless you do it, have it done while you're living. So you might as well have your own, what is it now, not wait for others to give you flowers while you're living. See that you get them yourself. And so, yes, Mrs. Jackson. All right, Mrs. Jackson. All right, Virginia, come on now. When can you start on my portrait? It would be like that, see? And that happened. I mean, I got one order after the other like that.
Mm-hmm.
My mother would just talk like that. It's people, even on the street, when we'd be walking on the street, Mom and I together,
mm-hmm.
on our way up to, we might be walking on up Druid Hill Avenue to the studio. She would say, her apartment houses were in the 1600 block. She had more in the one block, in the 1600 block, than in any other block in the area where she had apartment houses.
Mm-hmm.
She would say something on the street if she saw a minister or anybody whom she knew. Period. Just stop him or her on the street. Come on, what about your portrait? Here's Virginia. She has studio. Okay, Sister Jackson. She said, you know what it means. Come on, immortalize yourself through portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And portrait artists would come like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Getting back to that October 14th, 1939 article, it said that one of your tutors or teachers was Ralph Damon, and it said that he was
Dermond. D-U-M-O-N-D.
And it said that he was a close friend of Frederick Douglass.
That is right.
Now, did this influence I would imagine your mother, did she put you in his charge? Did your mother get Dermon for you to...
No. Mm-hmm. My mother is the one who caused me to go to the art students' league.
Mm.
And she felt that while my husband was working on his doctorate at the time, and I was working on my master's,
mm.
and she felt that I should also specialize in art at the art students' league.
Mm.
And
that's where you met Mr. Dermon?
Mm-hmm. He's one of my instructors, the Art Students League.
Right. Well, did Frederick Douglass...
My husband was in accord with my taking art at the time. He also was in accord with my taking art. And it was then that he took care of expenses for the Art Students League.
Mm-hmm.
For my master's degree, it's my mother who took care of my expenses.
Right.
Yes. Because she felt that I should continue to speak my husband's language, at least by getting a master's degree. Males aren't in accord with the females
mm-hmm.
Getting in the limelight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At least not until this women's lib has come up,
mm-hmm.
This movement has been on. And I feel it's been the natural thing. And women should be in the background.
Right. And that's what your mother thought? Women should be in the background?
No!
Oh.
My husband.
Oh.
My husband, not my mother.
Yeah, I was.
My mother's the one who said, Virginia, you get your master's degree so you can continue to speak your husband's language. Now, of course, he'll be getting his doctorate, but you ought to at least get your master's. So that's how that came about, see?
Right, because I found it interesting.
It's my mother, not my father, not my husband.
Right, I found an interesting quote that you made in 1944 about women ministers. And I was wondering if you had your mother in mind. You said that out of the Afro article on May 13, 1944, you said that I feel that women should be allowed the same privileges as men. As ministers, many women could do a more effective job as job of converting persons to the cause. Now, did you have your mother in mind when you made that statement?
Yes.
Did your mother ever indicate she wanted to be a minister? Or
no. Well, my mother would lecture and sing while my father showed the religious moving pictures when we traveled for 7 years after I was born. Travel over 28 states. My mother would lecture and sing. She practically preached. She was the evangelistic type she was an evangelistic type of person. And she would practically preach. And she, brought converts to Christ
mm-hmm.
during the moving pictures.
Oh, she did?
Yes, the life of Christ,
mm-hmm.
the heaven and hell, the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures like that were shown. My mother, and she believed in women being ministers. She did.
Well, why didn't she become one, if she believed so strongly in the fact? I mean, what did your mother? Your mother must have had.
Well, I don't think that she thought so strongly along those lines, but she was had the talent, had such talent for the ministry, for speaking.
Mm-hmm.
She was very oratorical. My father wasn't much of a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
It was my mother who was. And I really don't think that she thought of becoming a minister of a church or anything like
mm-hmm.
that, no. But using this, and she was just so full of and fiery. Oh, she was fiery. She was just a part of her that many people thought she was a minister, but she wasn't.
I know you have.
Maybe I'm not making myself clear, but. Or coherent, but that, I think that's about the best way I can put it.
Well, I've heard you and your sister say that she had a special sense of referring to herself as being someone whom God had opened her mouth and that no man could shut it, and that she used to tell you that that you didn't know, speaking to her children, that they didn't know who she was, but they would find out after she died. Did she have a special sense or special...
You don't know how great I am until I'm gone.
Right. Did she have
That's
a...
That's how she used to talk.
Right. And
but during later years.
During later years.
During while she was ill, she began talking in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when she had these strokes, a series of strokes,
mm-hmm.
she began talking in that fashion.
But had she had a religious experience, say, in the 30s or 20s, that convinced her that she was a very special person in the sight of God?
No,
beyond
it wasn't.
The,
no.
Mm-hmm.
She had a mastoid. She had a mastoid operation.
Right.
The bone behind the left ear had decayed and was causing poison to seep through the system. And finally, she couldn't stand the pain any longer. She was treated for neuralgia for about 6 months by a local physician. And when she could no longer stand the pain, she went to Johns Hopkins Hospital. They operated on her. The next day, they said if she'd waited a day later, she would have died.
Right.
Now, she felt that God had saved her life. Mm-hmm. And she promised God, if he'd let her live after that operation, or during that operation, if he'd let her continue to live, she would devote her life, the rest of her life, to his service.
Right.
That's how that came about.
Mm-hmm. Did your mother approve of the other marriages made by your sisters to Clarence Mitchell and Carl Downs?
I was the only one who bolted the fence.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I believe that my husband this young man,
mm-hmm.
possessed qualities, such unusual qualities.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that if I should marry him, you know, that
mm-hmm.
he was the one. He was the one. I was in love with him. He was the one. So I bolted the family.
Mm-hmm.
We went to live for ourselves. Aruma, I don't see how in the world we made it, but we did.
Mm-hmm.
During Depression years, of course, everything was much cheaper. But golly, Aruma, to think he only would get some weeks $1.25 a week from selling insurance and some $5 a week. We managed to rent a room and the use of the kitchen and buy food to exist.
You mean to say your mother ostracized you, or what?
Oh, no.
She just didn't support you?
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, we weren't left. We determined we'd step out for ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And refused any help.
Oh, refused?
Refused any assistance.
Did she offer to give you?
We wanted to show what we could do.
Did she offer to give you any help?
Oh, yes.
Why,
she had us in an apartment there when we first got married, one of her apartments.
Mm-hmm.
Parents. Typical parents, they feel they know and you don't know, and Mama would come in and change furniture all around and so forth. And so then we finally decided we'd go out definitely for ourselves.
Oh.
That's how that came about, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, your husband...
She didn't mean any harm to any men, but
mm-hmm.
a typical parent. After all, we were young, and
mm-hmm.
we hadn't had the experience,
but
I had a background in art.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I knew something about fixing up apartments and the like, but, you know, typical parents
mm-hmm.
felt that we didn't have the experience that she had. And she should help us in that fashion. Oh, yes, when we were around 8 and 9, when Anita was around 6.5 or 7, I was, must have been 8, maybe a little earlier, Papa taught us how to make bread.
Mm-hmm.
Biscuits and rolls. He did most of the cooking. He let my mother rest because she was the star attraction of the moving pictures, the shows, you know. She would do this lecturing and singing. It was pretty hard on her, so in the morning, so he would let her rest while he did the cooking. See,
mm-hmm.
they were a team. That's how they worked together.
Mm-hmm. I understand that this is how
he taught us to cook, mm-hmm. and we learned to cook at a very early ages.
Mm-hmm.
They did. So I definitely knew how to cook. When I got married, oh my gosh, I could cook everything, practically.
Right. Now,
as far as plain everyday cooking is concerned, not all this fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get I guess you did know Mr. Downs. He seems to have been a quite remarkable man. Can you characterize him in a few words?
I don't know much about, I was away from, I was away from Baltimore for quite a period of time, and I don't know much about the other two sisters and so forth. I went out for myself. My husband and I went out for ourselves, and I couldn't give you much of a background on that.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to do that themselves. Juanita could do that.
Right.
She'd know much more about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, you unveiled the portrait of Mrs. McLeod Bethune.
McLeod Bethune, that is
in the
Department of Labor, Washington,
D.C. October.
Now, don't ask me for the date.
October 1940. I have the date right here. Now, did your mother help you to secure that commission, or
no?
Were they?
I was out on my own.
Oh, you so you
oh,
really?
Yes, I told you went back and forth to New York to get orders and the like, and I contacted also Mrs. Bethune about her portraits being painted, but nobody helped me with that.
But I guess your mother, she was aware that you were the daughter of Lily Mae Jackson.
Oh yes, oh.
Yes. Oh, so indeed,
oh, yes,
yeah.
Of
so
course.
Indeed, your mother's
oh,
name
yes,
did
surely.
Did,
oh, yes.
Did give you entree
she
into some place. Yeah.
She knew that I was Lily Carol Jackson's daughter.
All right.
And she knew, of
okay.
course, that I was Juanita Jackson Mitchell's sister.
Right.
Juanita Jackson Mitchell used to be her ghostwriter.
Her ghostwriter?
Yeah, one of her ghostwriters.
In what, in for what magazine or newspaper?
You have to, maybe Juanita doesn't want me to talk about that. You let Juanita talk about that.
Uh-huh.
I'm never sure that she was one of Verma Bob Bethune's ghostwriters.
Uh-huh. Well, were your mother and Mrs. Bethune close friends? Or I guess they
Juanita,
were.
Juanita. Juanita and Mrs. Bethune were close friends. She used to call Juanita the girl from the Golden West with affection, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The affection, that's when Juanita and Mitch were out there in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Right.
He was the executive secretary of the Urban League at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Did your mother ever... Well, you can't comment on your mother's relationship with Mrs. Bethune at all. Do you have any way of characterizing it for us?
You see, I had Mary McLeod Bethune over at the one of the NAACP mass meetings. I was promotional secretary at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't able to appear during the month of February. It was packed and jammed on the inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit myself, I'm a crackerjack promotional agent.
Right.
I can promote. And mm-hmm. I have been jamming the streets all around there. She couldn't come, she disappointed us, but she came the next month when Dr. Mordecai Johnson was our guest speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Also had Mrs. Roosevelt to appear as a guest speaker at one of the mass meetings. But of course, when I made my contacts, they knew definitely that I was the sister of Juanita Mitchell and of course, Lily Jackson's daughter.
Right.
Yes. You know, the membership was practically doubled when I was membership secretary of the Baltimore branch at ACNP and finally promotional secretary.
Right.
I used to even get down there, the longshoremen unions, meetings, and used to be a soapbox speaker. Used to get on the streets and
hmm.
preach NAACP.
Right. And then there was an article in the Afro in January of 1944 which said that your first meeting as a membership secretary was quite successful. You drew a capacity crowd at the Sharp Street. You had Ollie Stewart, who was the Afro War correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
And was it 1944 the year you became involved in branch activities in Baltimore? Was it that it started?
You know, you deal in dates, which is very important, but I am not very good on dates. You would have to check on that yourself, because I can't recall. I really can't recall.